Thanks for those songs, Steve. It's great to be here, to be able to celebrate God and His love and thank Him for that. Mark is with Judy and the family down in Florida for the funeral of Judy's mother, and so I get the chance to be here before you, and I hope that some of the things we want to talk about this morning will be beneficial. Start a little bit oddly. Anyone ever played this game before? Operation. 1965, the year of my birth, Milton Bradley came out with the skill game, that's debatable, Operation. Cavity Sam had ailments. He had writer's cramp, he had a funny bone, he had water on the knee, he had an Adam's apple, he had a wrenched ankle, and several others. And so what you had to do was you had to take this little thing, tweezer, scalpel, as it were, and you had to go in and remove these ailments of Cavity Sam. But it required a steady hand. And if your hand wasn't steady, the metal of your scalpel would hit on, and I don't have batteries in here, so don't cringe as I start to do, would hit on the metal, and there's some kind of an electronic open loop. I don't even know what that means. The electricians probably do. But when you touch that, you hear this awful, and his nose would light up. And so, loads of fun. Arguably the greatest game ever or the worst. You decide. The jury is still out on that. But Cavity Sam had a broken heart. And it was right there in the middle. And it was one of the toughest things to remove. Do you remember that? Some of the other ones had little things you could grab on. But the broken heart was the most difficult thing to remove out of Cavity Sam. And I can remember a friend of mine had this, and we used to go over there and play it. And I'd always go for the broken heart because you get the most points if you got Cavity Sam's broken heart. I want to suggest to you something this morning as we think about a topic that's going to be familiar, and we're going to look at a number of verses that are very familiar to you. But I want to suggest to you this morning that God is playing the ultimate game of operation with you. God, in His steady hand, His precise hand, is attempting to reach into your body cavity, if it were, and remove your broken heart. He has the skill to do that, if you will let Him. And He wants to replace your broken heart with something that is transforming in our lives, your lives and my lives. He wants to replace my broken heart with the heart of His Son, Jesus Christ. Our stony hearts within us can be removed. And if we'll allow God to put His Son's heart into our lives, we'll be in rhythm with God's heart. And it will be transforming. Jesus inside of you. What if that happened? Think with me for a moment. What if that occurred? What if everything else in your life was exactly the same? Maybe all of your relationships are the same. Maybe your lousy job is the same, or your lousy boss is the same, or your health problems are all the same. Let's say everything else about you, physically and in your circumstances, are the exact same, but yet we allowed God to remove our broken heart and put Jesus' heart into us. Think about that for a moment. And then think about, with this in our minds, how would we experience life differently? What would that look like in each of our lives? With Jesus' heart in us, beating in rhythm with God's heart. Would people view me differently if I allowed that operation to take place? Would I view myself differently? Would others look at you and say, wow, what happened to Phil, or what happened to Susie? What happened? Something's changed. Would they see that in us? Would they see that in us? I suggest to you it would be noticeably different, life transforming, if we allowed God to do that ultimate operation on us. There's nothing more core in our lives than to have the heart of Jesus in us. There's nothing more that will transform our lives to make us true followers if we'll allow that to occur. It's like living in His steps. Exactly. It's like following Him with our total and complete being. That's what it would be like. We're talking this year about being the light of the world and how we can affect the world. But before we get to that point of being light into the world, we're going to have to take this first step and allow God to transform us. Allow us to be who we need to be. Allow us to be like Christ, and then, and only then, will we be able to be the lights of the world that Jesus talked about. Turn over to Ephesians 5 with me as we start and think about this heart of Jesus within us. Ephesians 5, verse 1. Paul here says, "Therefore, be imitators of God as beloved children, and walk in love, just as Christ also loved you, and gave Himself up for us, an offering and a sacrifice to God as a fragrant aroma." This was Jesus' being. Can that be our being? Can we be like Jesus? Can we follow in His footsteps, as it says here, as we look at His heart exposed? His heart was willing to sacrifice. It was a heart that was sacrificing and therefore pleasing. Next quarter in the adult class, if I can do a little bit of a preview, we're going to discuss something that I think it needs to be discussed on a frequent basis. And that is, we're going to look at Jesus. We're going to look at what He did. We're going to look at what He said. And we're going to try to get a frame of reference in our minds to say that if everything else in my life is the same, if all of my circumstances are the same, how can I become more like Jesus so that when I face life, I will face it like Jesus faced life? That's what we're going to do next quarter as we try to be lights of the world and become more like Jesus. And so that's what we'll do. When I'm changed from the inside, what will that look like? Well, this is not some kind of a new thought or a new study in any way. We might just call it maybe a rediscovery of how Jesus walked and lived and what He said and what He did. And this is how we're going to do it. We're going to do it in terms of examining His total devotion to the Father. And when I mean total devotion, I mean everything about Christ's being. And this is how we'll look at it. First, we'll look at His heart. And we'll say, what was Jesus' heart like? How did He feel? How was He compassionate? And then we'll look at His brain and say, how did Jesus think? How did He reason? How was He logical? And look at the Gospels and try to pull that out. And then we'll look at His eyes and we'll say, how did Jesus see others? And then we'll look at His ears and we'll say, how did Jesus, what was so special about Jesus' ears and the way in which He listened to people? And then we'll talk about His mouth. What was so special about Jesus' mouth? So when He said things, people listened and were amazed. Can I have the mouth of Jesus? We'll look at His hands, His servant hands, His feet, always doing the will of the Father in the direction and the path of the Father. We'll look at His knees. We'll look at everything about Jesus. And I mention all that because I want to challenge you now to start thinking in terms, as you're reading your Bible, as you're doing your devotions, as you're studying, start thinking about those passages in the Gospels that would fall into line with those and say, you know what, that's an example of Jesus' heart. I'm going to write that down. So when we discuss that, you could say, well, over in Matthew, whatever, I think it's an example of Jesus' heart. And then we can discuss that. That's what we'll do on Sunday mornings. And then on Wednesday nights, we're going to come back together and we're going to just talk about how we might be able to emulate Jesus, His heart, His mouth, His eyes, His knees, His hands, and all that. And while we do that, we're going to make a contrast. There was a group of people who claimed to be followers of Jesus, who thought they had the right mouths, the right hearts, the right feet, the right hands, but they didn't. And they were constantly being contrasted and in arguments with Jesus because they didn't have it right. And you know who I'm talking about. They were the Pharisees and the Sadducees. And so we'll set them up and say, okay, here's an excellent example of the heart not to have compared to Jesus's. I think it'll be a good discussion. I hope we can take it, maybe go into one another's homes on occasion and dig even deeper into the eyes or the ears of Jesus. But I say all that to say this. I think we need to examine ourselves that way. Truly devoted followers of Jesus. It is a constant examination process. And sometimes I think I miss that in my life. I go 6 months without really sitting down and saying, am I like Jesus in every way? And then having the courage, and a lot of times it takes courage to say, no, I'm not. I don't have the hands of Jesus. I haven't done anything with my hands the past 6 months that's even remotely like Jesus' hands. That's the examination process that I think we need. Look in 1 Corinthians. Examination. I mean, I get great at examining others. I mean, that's what I do for a living. I cross-examine others. I look at facts and I look at what they're saying and I start poking holes in what everybody else is saying or doing. And I become an expert in cross-examining others. And what Paul here is saying in 1 Corinthians 11:1, be imitators of me just as I also am of Christ. He's saying, Corinthians, you need to examine yourself. How do you know if you're imitating Christ or imitating me as I imitate Christ? Well, you have to examine yourself. We need to be quit being specialists in cross-examining others and start being specialists in self-examination. And I think that's what Paul is talking about. In this passage, he goes on and talks about their problems with the Lord's Supper. And in verse 28, he says, but let a man examine himself. And so there's this theme that Paul has throughout the book of Corinthians where they're having problems and he's saying, take a look at yourself. Fix this. The only way to fix it is to realize that you're not living up to what you should. In 13th chapter, in verse 5, Paul says in 13:5, 2 Corinthians, test yourselves to see if you are in the faith. Examine yourselves. Or do you not recognize this about yourself, that Jesus Christ is in you, unless indeed you fail the test? So I want to suggest to us this morning that that is a test that we need to be taking, not once a semester, or once a year, or once a week. It's on a daily basis. We die to Christ on a daily basis, and that requires me to examine myself on a regular basis. If we're not careful, maybe your examination goes like mine sometimes. Well, here's a doctrinal issue, or here's a theological principle, and I'm going to examine that to make sure I believe what the Bible says about that. And so, for example, my examination process will say, well, let's take baptism. Okay, I believe it's for immersion by a believer for the remission of sins. And then I go examine myself to make sure I'm right about that. And I say, okay, I got this passage. Okay, I'm right about baptism, therefore I've examined myself. Well, I'm not sure that's what Paul is talking about there. I mean, I'm not saying that it's not important to be right about baptism. It's critically important. What I'm suggesting is self-examination is more than just making sure that I believe what's right about these biblical principles. It's a heart issue as well. It's a heart issue as well. Am I like Christ? Do I have His heart? Am I committed? Can we all agree that Jesus was committed with His total being to the will of the Father? I'm sure we all can. Am I to that level? Am I striving to get to that level? I was walking through the Christian bookstore over by Zona Rosa Lifeway, and this was just sitting there. And I walked by. I was kind of like, okay, that's interesting. Not a fan. So I bought it. That's the way I do things, spontaneously. If it would have said, 20 reasons to be a follower of Jesus, I would have probably kept right on walking. But it said, not a fan. And I get that. I said, okay, this may have a sports analogy. I'm all over this. So I bought it by Kyle Eidelman. And I started reading it. And it was quite enlightening for me. You talk about self-examination, because what Eidelman wants you to do is he wants you to say, okay, a fan is an enthusiastic admirer. And then start asking the tough questions about your own life. Are you an enthusiastic admirer of Jesus Christ? Or are you a follower? That's the kind of self-examination that this book got me thinking about. I want to share with you some of the ideas out of this book. Enthusiastic admirer versus a total and complete follower. Examine yourself. Turn over to Matthew, the 7th chapter. You could probably quote this, but I want to spend some time with this verse here this morning and thinking about fan versus follower. Matthew 7:21. Here Jesus says, "Not everyone who says to me, 'Lord, Lord,' will enter the kingdom of heaven, but he that does the will of my Father who is in heaven. Many will say to me on that day, 'Lord, Lord, did we not prophesy in your name, and in your name cast out demons, and in your name perform many miracles?' Then I will declare to them, 'I never knew you. Depart from me, you who practice lawlessness.'" I got to tell you, this is a frightening passage to me. I don't know how often we look at it and just really break it down. But I want you to just picture this scene with me. There is a day described by Jesus where there are a group of people that are standing before Him in judgment, and they're confident, and they're probably standing a little upright, and they're not cowering in fear. And they're saying to themselves, "All right, this is going to be good. This is going to be good." And Jesus says, these people are going to be stunned, stunned at what He's about to say to them. I don't want to make anyone here this morning paranoid, but this passage scares me. I look at this passage and I think through the years, I'm like, okay, all right, who is he talking about here? Well, he's not talking about unbelievers, atheists, so I separate that group. I mean, that's a bunch of people that just have totally rejected God. He's not talking about them. Just put them over there. It's not the unbelievers that he's talking about. You know, I really don't think he's talking about the non-committed Christian. You know, someone that's kind of riding the fence of Christianity and kind of halfway in the kingdom, halfway out. We know that doesn't work, but maybe somebody's thinking that way. But when they go to the judgment and you're kind of just, you've been occasionally committed or occasionally on fire, but most of the time, you know, you've been lukewarm. If that person is at the judgment scene, you know what that looks like. They're going up to Jesus and they're like, "Oh man, I hope it's like a test you take that you know you didn't study for, and you're like, I hope I somehow pulled out a good grade," and your teacher hands the test back and you look at it and you're like, I knew that was coming. And so this lukewarm Christian standing before God, and they're looking and they're thinking, "Oh, please, 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 please." And Jesus just says, "No." And you know what? They go, "I knew that was coming." Put those people aside, because they're not going to be stunned at the second coming. They're going to be anxious and then crushed. And you know, I've looked at this passage time and time again, and you know what makes the greatest, it gets scary and then I get comfortable. I just say, "Oh, okay. Everybody that's in a denomination, that's who he's talking about." And so I shove all of the people whose doctrine I know is wrong over here, and I say, "That's, see, they're saying, 'Lord, Lord,' they're doing things, they're active, but they've just got they've got their biblical interpretation wrong, and that's who he's talking about. Okay, I feel better now. You know, if we're truly going to self-examine who we are, in light of the question, do I have the heart of Jesus? I mean, the very first thing we're going to have to do is read this passage and for a moment consider, is he talking about me? Is it possible that I am in the Lord, Lord crowd? Consider that for a moment. Just consider that with me as a possibility. Is it possible Jesus is talking about me? Who is that group? Lord, Lord. These are believers. These are zealous people. Lord, Lord. Not Jesus, Jesus. He's describing a group of people that he says places him as Lord verbally. Lord, Lord. There is a modicum of devotion and zeal and fervor with that phrase, Lord, Lord. That's who we're talking about. And he's talking about many, not few, not some. He says, many will say, Lord, Lord. And then look at this resume. It's amazing. Jesus sets up this hypothetical situation and then he gives this group of people, whomever they might be, quite a resume. This is not a group of people who said, I came to church once a week. That's on my resume. Or I gave 10%. You know, I went even above and beyond 10. I gave 15%. That's on my resume. Or I helped out at the soup kitchen 2 times a year. I mean, whatever it is. I mean, this is the resume Jesus gives this group, prophesying in his name. Casting out demons. Performing miracles in his name. This group is active religiously. These people aren't hanging out at the church building on occasion. These people are active religiously. It's impressive. Don't turn over there. Just listen to Hosea 6:6. Because I thought about this verse when I was reading about this group of people. God is talking about Israel and he says, "For I delight in loyalty rather than sacrifice and in knowledge of God rather than burnt offerings." That's the verse that came to mind. These active religious people were burning things for God, or prophesying for God, or offering sacrifices for God. And God said, I want loyalty. So what's missing with all this activity and this Lord, Lord? What's missing with this group? The problem that Jesus says with this group is there's a disconnect between what they say and what they do. There's a disconnect between their knowledge of God and their lives. There's a disconnect between whether their lives truly reflect the fact that they have the heart of Jesus in them. That's the problem with these people. James, in James 2, turn over there with me. James 2 describes it this way. Verse 14. What is it, my brethren, if a man says he has faith, but he has no works? Can that faith save him? If a brother or sister is without clothing and in need of daily food, and one of you says to them, go in peace, be warm and be filled, and yet you do not give them what is necessary for their body, what use is that? Even so, faith, if it has no works, is dead, being by itself. And so when the Lord, Lord crowd is doing these religious activities, but they're not doing it within the will of God. They're not doing it for the right reasons. They're not doing it with the heart of God. There's the disconnect between what they're saying and what they're doing. Jesus' response is very simple. I never knew you. That intimacy that the word knew means. Jesus is telling these people, whatever your resume said, whatever you said, your lives reflected a person that I never knew. They were confident. They were religious. They were active. They were verbally assenting to the Lord. And Jesus says, I don't know you. If we can read that passage and just shove everybody else into that group except ourselves and not consider the fact that that could be me, then we're making a grave mistake that may come back to haunt us one day. One day. Is it possible that I am in the Lord, Lord group? Am I a fan of Jesus, Lord, Lord? Or am I a true follower? Those are the kind of hard questions that sometimes I think we avoid. I do. And I just want to go along in the flow of Christianity without truly examining myself. Jesus, in the passage right above where we were looking in Matthew 7, says in verse 13, "Enter by the narrow gate, for the gate is wide and the way is broad that leads to destruction. And many are those that enter by it, for the gate is small and the way is narrow that leads to life. And few are those who find it." Is it possible? Is it possible that I am on the wrong road? That my path is off God's path? If I answer that question, it's not possible. Am I truly examining myself the way the Scriptures wants me to? We were coming back from Gulf Shores a couple years ago, and we were driving and we were cutting across Mississippi. I don't recommend that to anyone. We were cutting across Mississippi, trying to get to Vicksburg, and all of the interstates in Mississippi, for some reason, run horizontal. You got 55, you got 59. There's no, I don't believe, unless you get clear up into the state. So we're cutting across the back roads in Mississippi. And I'm driving, and I'm on the phone, which, kids, bad idea. Driving and texting is bad, so's driving and talking. And I'm going along, and I'm supposed to turn on 59 or 55, and I'm on the phone. And about 20 minutes later, I finally get off the phone, and I go, okay, we're looking for 55. And Kristen says, the navigator, well, we passed that 20 miles ago. I had been driving on the wrong road, oblivious, for 20 miles. Now, I don't know if you're like me, but I hate backtracking. I should have turned around immediately and drove 20 miles back and then got on the road and gone north. But for some reason, I have a mental block with that. So I'm like, she's not here, so I can tell you this. I'm like, you're the navigator. Why didn't you say anything? I mean, it's somebody else's fault that I'm on the wrong road. And she says, you know, we're headed to Vicksburg. She says, we're fixing to have a Civil War reenactment here. If you start that up, buddy, get off the phone and drive. And so instead of turning around, you see the analogy there, instead of turning around and getting on the back road, or the right road, I decide we could just take this road and this road. And we end up going all over the place in Mississippi, encountering insects that, I'm not kidding you, are the size of hummingbirds. And the whole time I'm thinking, wow, if I'd have only known I was on the wrong road for 20 miles, this would have never happened. I mean, have you ever gotten yourself in a situation spiritually where you look back on the past few months and you think, what was I thinking? And I think that's what Jesus is saying. We can get on the wrong road. We may not even know it if we're not examining ourselves on a regular basis. Is it possible that I'm on the wrong road? Am I a fan or a follower? And I'm raising these questions to you, not because there's going to be some kind of an enlightenment at the end of this sermon. We're about out of time. I want myself to stop walking through life in my Christian walk, oblivious to the fact that I may not be showing the heart of Jesus, or the hands of Jesus, or the mind of Jesus. And I get so consumed with everything else that the true core, the true being, the true CEO of my mind ought to be the heart of Jesus. And I'm oblivious to that. We need to not be that way. Jesus, 20 times in his gospel, said, "Follow me." He didn't say, "I want a group of devoted admirers." Read John 6, the bread of life. You see what he does to the admirers. He says tough things and they walk away. They were not followers. Let me give you a few things that came from this book that might signal us that we're kind of in that fan category instead of the following category. And then I'll leave you with it. We're a fan if we like to compare ourselves with others as a way to measure our relationship with Christ. Have you ever done that? I know I'm not perfect, but I'm better than that guy. Husbands, we do this all the time. And you might use that illustration about the driving. Next time you're in trouble on the car, you could say, "Well, yeah, but I'm not as bad as Holloway. How'd you like to be married to that guy?" See, we do that all the time. We want to compare ourselves. We don't pick the strong Christian. We pick the Christian that we think, "Well, this Christian has problems, and thank God I'm not as bad as that person." That's what a fan does. A follower doesn't do that. A follower strives to put Jesus as our model and then do everything we can to reach that goal. Fans are happy to follow Jesus as long as that doesn't require any significant change or negative impact on our lives. I like to think of Nicodemus in this point, John 3. Nicodemus. Think about Nicodemus. Nicodemus came to Jesus by night. He was in the Sanhedrin. Go back and read John 3 and see if Nicodemus, when he came to Jesus, was a fan or a follower. Well, we know the answer to that. He wanted to know about Jesus, and he came to him by night, and he knew that Jesus was the Son of God, but he had a ton of baggage that he was going to have to give up. A huge sacrifice for a member of the Sanhedrin to walk away from it all and follow Jesus. And initially, he wasn't ready to do that. And so he comes to Jesus by night. It was going to cost him a lot. So what if I said, take out a piece of paper, get a pen, we're going to take 5 minutes, and I want you to list everything that being a Christian has cost you. Ready, go. I'd be. Okay. Give me a minute. I'm going to think of something at some point that Christianity has cost me. Give me a minute. Hold on. Can we get 10 minutes instead of 5? I mean, do you ever feel that way? Fans feel that way. Followers would be able to say, there was the time that I spoke out to someone and it cost me that friendship. I'll write their name down. There was a time that I had to turn my back on my family to follow Jesus. I'll write that down. There was a time where I quit my job because it was getting in the way and we went on the beans and rice plan or whatever. Followers wouldn't take 20 minutes to find something to put on that list. Fans confuse knowledge with intimacy. We know about Jesus. Do we know Him? I read the Psalms and I think, wow, David knew God and God knew David. It's almost an exercise in self-examination right there to read of the intimacy that David speaks and converses about God and with God. And I wonder, could I come up with something even remotely like the Psalms that David came up with? Or would I just start talking about, well, Jesus turned water to wine. Jesus did this. Jesus did that. I know about Jesus. Do I know Him? Fans are more interested in following the rules than following Jesus. Pharisees, classic example. In Matthew 23, Jesus just pronounces all those woes on the fans known as Pharisees. They were fans of God. They were admirers of God. They were rules followers. And Jesus said, you're a rules follower. You're not a God follower. Fans are more interested in outside appearances than the inside. And in Matthew 23 and verse 5, Jesus said, everything that the Pharisees do was to be seen by men. It was a show. When the tough gets going, fans lose interest. Have you ever been there? Have you ever been that Christian? As soon as life gets tough, God's abandoned me. And I go into the tank with my faith. And then I'm pulled out of it and everything's great and I'm on fire for God. And then I lose interest again. It's like KU basketball fans. 3 weeks ago, they lost three in a row and they're horrible. And now they've won two in a row. They're the greatest. Are we like that with Jesus? Fans are. Fans have no passion for Jesus. Everything is rote. Everything is ritualistic. Everything is just a pattern that we follow. And the passion is gone. If we find ourselves passionless, we've got to ask ourselves, are we following Jesus or are we just a casual admirer of Him? Jesus said in Luke 9:23, if anyone will come after me, he will deny himself and take up his cross daily and follow me. If anyone will come after me, come after. You know what that word, that phrase is? That is an analogy of the pursuit of a man who wants to marry a woman. And he says, I cannot live without her. And I am going to pursue her. And Jesus says, and uses that same phrase and says, you want to be my disciple? You need to pursue me with that kind of intensity. That's a follower. I'll leave you with that. My phone has this really cool thing. It's Google Maps. Your phone probably does too. And you click on there and you can type in anything you want. Any place you want to go, you type it in there. And then you hit this little icon on the left and then it'll ask you a question. Current location? It wants to know if you want to start where you are right now and get directions where you need to go. That's a great tool. And I hit that and I get an icon right where I am right now. I'll tell you where to go. And I want to suggest to you this morning that that's the way God is. I mean, sometimes we hear sermons like this and we're like, okay, I'm going to be a follower, but I got to do this first, or I'm going to do that first, or I'm going to do this. And I want the heart of God. I want God to operate and pull my broken heart out. But first I've got to get this straightened out. Or as soon as I get a little older, I'll do that. Or as soon as I'm too old to do that. And God says, your current location is all He wants. Hit that button and start following the path that He wants us to follow, to do the will of God. And so wherever we are this morning, I don't know where you are. You probably don't know where I am. It is a self-examination. But wherever our current location is, have the courage to truly examine ourselves and take the heart of God that God wants to give it and put it in our lives and start behaving like Jesus. Stop being fans and start being followers. If we can help anyone in that, please let us know as we stand and say.